Good morning. We have one announcement today. The Social Justice Council is inviting everyone to stop by the Garden for Good after church to pick out an ear of popcorn from the garden.
Step away from the walls that surround you this morning. Come out from behind the doors where you hide. Wear your own skin proudly. You are enough and more than enough. And you are welcome here. Come, let us worship together. Please take just a moment to say hello or to introduce yourself to your nearest neighbors.
We light this chalice and we honor the fire of commitment, which calls us to honor all lives as valuable and all loving paths as good. Please rise in body or spirit and join me in singing our first hymn, number 170, We Are a Gentle, Angry People. Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. At LCUUC, we work to surround this community with the spirit of love in everything we do. My name is Wendy, and I'm the worship associate for this morning's service. No matter who you are or where you have come from, you are welcome here. We welcome those who have known nothing but acceptance in their lives and those who have known the pain of exclusion and suffered disdain for their differences. LCUUC is a UUA-recognized welcoming congregation, which means we welcome and affirm queer and trans people and all people, regardless of who they love or what pronouns they use. Please join us for refreshments and conversation in our social hall after the service, and while you're there, stop by the welcome table to find out more about LCUUC. Today's order of service includes announcements of upcoming activities, and we look forward to everyone joining in. Like and follow LCUUC on Facebook in order to get ongoing information about activities, and check out our webpage at lcuuc.org to stay current on services and events. Please take a moment at this point in the service to silence all electronics you may have here with you today. We are so pleased that you have chosen to celebrate and worship with us.
While we're getting lined up here, this is a really fun anthem to do in that it's got a hymn tune that kind of winds its way through, back and forth, through the song. Amy will have readings, and the choir will sing harmonizations to the hymn tune. So the one constant in all of this is you and your hymn tune. We'll sing it once we get started. The choir will sing it once, and then we want to sing it with you twice. Excuse me. We're going to sing it with you twice, and then we'll go on with the readings and the harmonizations, and I'll direct you when to come in.
Tonight about coming out of the closet, and not in the traditional sense, not just the gay closet. I think we all have closets. Your closet may be telling someone you love her for the very first time, or telling someone you're pregnant, or telling someone you have cancer, or any of the other terrible and hard conversations in our lives. All a closet is a hard conversation. And although our topics may vary tremendously, the experience of being in and coming out of the closet is universal. It is scary, and we hate it, and it needs to be done. Like many of us, I've lived in a few closets in my life, and yet most often my walls were rainbow. But inside in the dark, you can't tell what color the walls are. You just know what it feels like to live in a closet. So really, my closet is no different than yours or yours or yours. Sure, I'll give you 100 reasons why coming out of my closet was harder than coming out of yours. But here's the thing, that's not right. Hard is not relative. Hard is hard. Tell me that explaining to someone you've just declared bankruptcy is harder than telling someone that you cheated on them? Who can tell me that his coming out story is harder than telling your 5-year-old you're getting a divorce? There is no harder. There is only hard. We need to stop ranking our hard against everyone else's hard just to make us feel better or worse about our closets and just commiserate on the fact that we all have hard. At some point in our lives, we all live in closets, and they may feel safe or at least safer than what's on the outside. But I'm here to tell you, no matter what your walls are made of, a closet is no place for a person to live.
Many windows, one blood, many waters, one sea, all lifted hearts are free.
The only story that matters is the one that you want to write. So the next time you find yourself in a pitch black closet clutching your grenade, know that we've all been there before. And you may feel so very alone, but you're not. And we know it's hard, but we need you out here. No matter what your walls are made of, because I guarantee you that there are others peering through the keyholes in their closets, looking for the next brave soul to bust a door open. So be the person. Show the world we're bigger than our closets and that a closet is no place for a person to live. One of the ways that we care for our community is by contributing to local food pantries financially and by collecting non-perishable food items. So if you've brought something to share today, please bring it forward or ask a child to bring it forward. Put it in the basket here. And I invite the children to stay up front for a story. Our story today is about a little girl named Olympia Brown. And when Olympia was a little girl, girls weren't allowed to whistle. Can you imagine whistling being something people worried about? They used to say a whistling girl and a crowing hen will always come to no good end, and then you'd get in trouble. Girls weren't allowed to climb trees. Can you imagine trying to climb trees in a long skirt? Girls weren't allowed to catch frogs. But Olympia did all those things. You can do whatever a boy can do, her mom and dad told her, and Olympia knew that was true. She climbed trees and she ran and she caught frogs and she laughed, and when she was in school, she answered the teacher's questions loud and clear. Little girls should be quiet, said one lady in town. Do you all know a bunch of really quiet little girls? They're quiet kids in school. Some. But Olympia didn't want to be quiet. She had a voice and she was going to use it every day. By the time she was a teenager, young women weren't supposed to go to college. Can you imagine a time when little girls got told, as soon as you got done, sometimes with middle school, but as soon as you got done with high school, that was it. That doesn't sound like much fun. Young women weren't supposed to leave home. They weren't supposed to learn complicated things. But she did all those things and more. She left home and she went to Antioch College. And she learned all kinds of complicated things. Young women should not be here, said one professor. But she ignored him and he said, since you're here anyway, they must read all their reports. Young women are not allowed to give speeches from memory. Olympia thought about that and decided, uh-uh. So when it was her turn to present her report, she took her papers in her hand and she looked around and then she rolled them up and threw them away. And she did her report from memory just like all the men did. She had a voice and she was going to use it every day. Now when Olympia Brown was in college, women weren't allowed to wear pants. They had to wear big long skirts every day. Not what you guys are thinking. You had to have something on your bottom half. When I was your age, when I was in school, the teachers weren't allowed to wear pants. They had to wear skirts. And girls weren't allowed to wear shorts to school. Not ever. You had to wear long pants or a long skirt because you weren't allowed to show your legs if you were a girl. Olympia decided she didn't want to wear long dresses that came all the way down to her toes. So she wore dresses that came to her knees, and under them, she wore pants that looked something like these. Except they were a little bit looser, and they had a ribbon at the ankle. And they were called bloomers. And she wore her bloomers every day and let everybody see them. Oh my goodness, women shouldn't show their ankles in public, said some of the men, and women shouldn't wear pants, but she did. When she got done with college, women weren't supposed to be ministers. Women weren't allowed to stand up front here and talk about anything important. But Olympia did. She graduated from St. Lawrence University, and she was ordained as a Universalist minister in June of that year, the second woman ever to be ordained by that church. Women shouldn't speak in public, said a minister at the time. Women shouldn't take the pulpit. But Reverend Olympia Brown did. For the next 35 years, she was a minister in 5 different congregations, including one around here. And she visited other congregations, too. She took the pulpit in every one, and she talked, and she was very smart. When she was born, women weren't allowed to vote. They couldn't say who could be elected. But guess what? She had a lot to say about that too, and she never shut up. She traveled all over the state of Kansas in a horse and a buggy to convince people that women should vote. She wrote hundreds of letters by hand, no computer. She spoke to representatives and senators. She marched in parade. She and her friends worked hard to get women to be allowed to vote. She had a voice, and she used it every day. And in November of 1920, when she was 85 years old, she voted for the very first time because she and her friends had made a difference. They changed the world. She always had a voice and she always used it. and they made a difference. You have a voice too, so if you decide what matters to you and you use your voice, you can change the world. Thank you for listening to my story. Can I have my lantern lighter? May the light and love of our chalice lead you today and every day. Today is our RE Welcome Sunday, the day when most of the teachers are going to meet their classes. So don't be surprised when folks are leaving. We're not exiting the church. It's just the RE classes. So please help me in singing the children to their classrooms. The song is called For You Shall Go Out. Words are in your order of service. A pastor friend of mine decided to put sanitary hot air dryers in the restrooms of his church. You know the ones I mean, where you push the button and rub your hands and then curse because they're still wet. After 3 weeks, he hung signs on them saying, "Do not use, broken." And a few days later, he pulled them all out again. And I asked what the heck had happened to break them so fast, and why hadn't he fixed or replaced them? Seemed like such a good idea for a congregation trying to avoid using disposable paper products. And with a shrug, he said, "Well, actually, they work just fine." But after 3 weeks, when I went in there to wash my hands, someone had taped a sign over them that said, "For a sample of this week's sermon, press button." I couldn't take it. In order to keep our own hot air flowing, the morning offering will now be given and received. Our thanks for these gifts given and received for the life and the work of this community. This is the time in our service where we share together our joys and our concerns. Before the service, you're always welcome to come up and silently light a candle. But during the service, we speak aloud and we light candles together. So would anyone who has a joy or concern to share, please raise your hand and an usher will bring you a microphone.
Hi, I'm Betsy, candle of concern for our son, Sean, who tore his ACL in his Friday night football game.
Hi, this is Laura, and I have a great joy that Kirtan is back at LCUUC, second Friday of the month. We didn't have it for several months, and it's back. I danced, I laughed, I cried, I sang, and I left feeling a whole lot better. It's really great vibrational medicine.
I'm Diane, and many of you must remember Mary Pope, who left our church about maybe 2-3 years ago to go down to Batavia, Illinois to be near her children. I spoke to her last night for over an hour. She's doing fantastic, and she loves it there.
Hi, my name is Alex, and I have a dog that is more than 100 years old, and I'm never going to see him again in 1 week.
This is Chris. A candle of concern for my little friend Matthew, who's hospitalized for 2 weeks for antibiotics for cystic fibrosis. And I visited him yesterday as my alter ego, Gramster, the ukulele-playing hamster.
Yeah, hi. You light a candle of concern. My cousin just found out he has bone cancer, and it looks like it's terminal.
Hi, this is Brian. And I'd like candles lit in commemoration of all those who died 9/11 and all those who have died as a subsequent occurrence. Thank you, George and Dick.
This is Kristen. If you could light a candle for Jonas Berger. Jonas was a volunteer at a turtle preservation organization in Costa Rica where our daughter Maya is volunteering, and he drowned this week. So for a candle for his family and also for Maya and the other volunteers who witnessed his death and were unable to save him and are coming together to grapple with this.
Hi, this is Al. A candle of joy for the week of sharing our community with the community of Family Promise. You know, it's a good thing we do, and anybody that has taken part in it, certainly, I think, like me, feels some joy in their heart from that that connection and that hope that we bring. A second candle of joy, I played in their first annual golf outing fundraiser, and you're looking at the winner of the longest putt with a child's plastic putter, so... Those of you that know me realize that anything that's childish, I excel at.
This is Doug. I'd like to light a candle, if you would, please, for my friend Bob Simeon, who's a very good friend of this church and a good friend of choirs everywhere. He was coming out of his dialysis treatment on Thursday, tripped and fell, and injured himself pretty badly, plus caused a spinal cord injury, so he's in the hospital right now. There's probably going to be surgery tomorrow, but we don't really know what else. And he's got a very, very long uphill battle ahead of him.
My name is Claire. Could you light a candle of joy Today we start our first youth group meeting, and I am just tickled pink to work with the kids this year. Thank you.
Hi, Mary. This is a candle of joy for Meredith and I. We managed to make it through 43 years of wedded bliss in one piece. Congratulations.
Hi, this is Leanne, candle of joy. My daughter Mona's turning 18 tomorrow, and she's very excited to be able to vote and make that type of difference in the world.
All right. And we light our last candle today for all of those joys and all of those sorrows which we hold deeply, but which we've not been able to voice here today.
Deciding to face who you are and share that with the world can be hard. Anne Lamott writes about taking care of yourself, and she said this, I thought I might take the opportunity to write down every single thing I know as of today. All truth is a paradox. Life is a precious, unfathomable, beautiful gift, and it is impossible here on the incarnational side of things. It has been a very bad match for those of us who were born extremely sensitive. It is so hard and weird that we wonder if we are being punked. And it is filled with heartbreaking sweetness and beauty, floods and babies, and acne and Mozart all swirled together. Almost everything will work again if you unplug it for a few minutes, including you. There is almost nothing outside of you that will help in any kind of lasting way unless you are waiting for an organ. You can't buy, achieve, or date it. This is the most horrible truth. Everyone is screwed up, broken, clingy, and scared, even the people who seem to have it more or less together. They are much more like you than you would believe. So try not to compare your insides to their outsides. Also, you can't save, fix, or rescue any of them or get any of them sober. But radical self-care is quantum and radiates out into the atmosphere like a little fresh air. It is a huge gift to the world. When people respond by saying, well, isn't she full of herself, smile obliquely like Mona Lisa and make both of you a nice cup of tea. Chocolate is 70% cocoa. Chocolate with 70% cocoa is not actually a food. Its best use is as bait in snake traps. Families, hard, hard, hard. No matter how cherished and astonishing they may be also. At family gatherings where you suddenly feel homicidal or suicidal, remember that in half of all cases, it's a miracle that this annoying person even lived. Earth is forgiveness school. You might as well start at the dinner table. That way, you can do this work in comfortable pants. When Blake said that we are here to learn to endure the beams of love, he knew that your family would be an intimate part of this, even as you want to run screaming for your cute little life, but that you are up to it. You can do it, Cinderella. You will be amazed. Food, try to do a little better. Grace, spiritual WD-40, water wings. The mystery of grace is that God loves Dick Cheney and me exactly as much as he or she loves your grandchild. Go figure. The movement of grace is what changes us, heals us, and our world. To summon grace, say, help, and then buckle up. Grace won't look like Casper the Friendly Ghost, but the phone will ring, or the mail will come, and then against all odds, you will get your sense of humor about yourself back. Laughter really is carbonated holiness, even if you are sick of me saying it. God, goodness, love, energy, the divine, a loving, animating intelligence, the cosmic muffin. You will worship and serve something. So like St. Bob said, you got to choose. You can play on our side or Bill Maher's or Franklin Graham's. Emerson said that the happiest person on earth is one that one who learns from nature the lessons of worship. So go outside a lot and look up. My pastor says that you can trap bees on the floor of a mason jar without a lid because they don't look up. If they did, they could fly to freedom. Faith. Paul Tillich said the opposite of faith is not doubt, but certainty. If you could say one thing to our little Tea Party friends, it would be this. Fundamentalism in all its forms is 90% of the reason the world is so terrifying. 3% is the existence of snakes. The love of our incredible dogs and cats is the closest most of us will come on this side of eternity to knowing the direct love of God. Although cats can be so bitter, which is not the God part, the crazy love is. Also, figure it out is not a slogan. Exercise. If you want to have a good life after you've grown a little less young, you must walk every day. There is no way around this. If you are in a wheelchair, you must do chair exercises. Every single doctor on earth will tell you this, so don't go by what I say. Death. Wow. So hard to bear when the few people you cannot live without die. You will never get over these losses, and you are not supposed to. We Christians like to think death is a major change of address, but in any case, the person will live fully again in your heart at some point and make you smile at the most inappropriate times. But their absence will also be a lifelong nightmare of homesickness for you. All truth is a paradox. Grief, friends, time, and tears will heal you. Tears will bathe and baptize and hydrate you and the ground on which you walk. The first thing God says to Moses is, take off your shoes. We are on holy ground. Hard to believe, but the dearest thing I know. Here ends the first reading.
Please join me in a silent moment of meditation or the spirit of prayer.
My father asked if I am gay. I asked, does it matter? He said, no, not really. I said, yes. He said, get out of my life. I guess it mattered. My friend asked why I talk about race so much. I asked, does it matter? He said, no, not really. I told him, yes. He said, you need to get that chip off your shoulder. I guess it mattered. My neighbor asked why I put that ramp up to my front door, and I said, does it matter? He said, no, not really. I told him because it made my life easier. He said, is there a way to make it look less obvious? I guess it mattered. A member of my church asked why I like gospel music. I asked, does it matter? She said, no, not really. I told her that it connects me to my Southern Christian childhood, and she said, I think you're in denial about your oppression. I guess it mattered. My God asked me, do you love yourself? I said, does it matter? She said, yes. I said, how can I love myself? I am gay, Latino, disabled. I am a Christian in a hostile climate. She said, that is the way I made you. Nothing will ever matter again. Here ends the second reading. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing number 121, We'll Build a Land.
In May of this year, the Harry Potter series of books became the best-selling series in recorded history. Sold more than 450 million copies worldwide. Now, to give you an idea, because those numbers are big, they have no meaning. The Bible, the best-selling book in history, has sold about 5 billion copies, so 11 Bibles for every copy of Harry Potter. Of course, the Bible's been sold since 1450. Harry Potter since 1997. So my guess is that most of you have read it or seen it or have a vague familiarity. If you haven't, that's okay. It's an imaginative story of good and evil, friendship and love and trust and growth. It's about wizards and witches and friends. Has spells and potions and goblins, centaurs and werewolves, an amazing magical school, even a flying motorcycle. And it all starts out with a little boy who lives in a closet under the stairs. The book stresses that his adopted family is normal, as normal and dull as they could be. They work at normal jobs. His cousin goes to a normal school. And they work hard to never stand out. And then there's Harry, down in his closet, a little weird, a little strange. If you asked his aunt and uncle, they would tell you he was an unwanted and embarrassing addition to the family, and at 11, Harry would have agreed with them. As long as he stayed in that little closet, life was lonely and sad and dull. It was safe, for a given value of safe. Just him and the spiders. And when he came out of that closet for good, his life changed forever. It was dangerous and exciting. It had new friends and bitter enemies, sparkly robes, a love interest or two. For the older among you, you may notice a passing resemblance here to coming out as gay before 1980, especially the bit about sparkly robes and quite a bit of danger. In 1869, which was about 100 years before the Stonewall riots in New York City that really kicked off the gay rights movement, a German homosexual rights advocate named Karl Heinrich Ulrichs first said, "Be honest. Self-disclosure is a means of emancipation." He pleaded with homosexual people to be open and said that their invisibility was a major obstacle toward changing public opinion, and public opinion wasn't good back then. But being homosexual was still illegal in most places, and being honest could result in a prison sentence or even a stay in a mental hospital with no end date in sight. So as you can imagine, not many people rushed toward honesty at that point. But before 1950, the idea of coming out as lesbian or gay was seen as a mirror of a young debutante's coming out in society. The words actually meant something a little different. Back then, when a young lady reached the point where she was to be introduced to marriageable young men, she came out. She was presented at a beautiful cotillion ball. They were more present in the South and wealthier families. But that was coming out. And gay people co-opted that expression to mean entering into gay society. Coming out as gay meant you came into a group of your own peers. It was about being recognized and included within your own community, not out in the greater world among straight people. After the 50s, and especially after the Stonewall riots, coming out became coming out of the closet. The emphasis changed from entering into a small circle of people just like you to escaping from the oppression of a dark box. Not entering into, but getting out of, and not a warm little circle of friends, but a big wide world. Coming out of the closet as non-straight wasn't easy. Up until quite recently, for most of us, it was one of the most terrible things we had ever done. A friend of mine once told me, "I am not coming out of the closet. Girl, I am staying so far in here, they will hang coats in front of me. And somewhere behind me, there will be people looking for Narnia." And he was telling the truth. He was too scared to budge from his closet under the stairs. He missed the Hogwarts Express. He missed the magic. He lived his entire life single. For Harry Potter, coming out of the closet began with a simple phrase, "You're a wizard, Harry." After years of not knowing what to call all the stuff that made him weird, suddenly, his label gave him a key to finding his people. But coming out today means more than just sticking a label on yourself. There is an "and" here. Coming out means both defining yourself in one way and proving that you are always more than that label or definition. We all have our closets. We all have those dark, safe places where we sit safe and alone, protecting ourselves from the world around us. We have labels that fit parts of our life. And some of them we try to wear in secret where no one can see because we can't imagine wearing them in public. because the world has a way of stripping us down to our labels, of removing all the other definitions and pieces that make us who we are, and reducing us to a series of words so that we can be defined and understood and put in a little box or a pigeonhole, accepted or cast away based on what is currently popular or exotic or new. But as Ash Beckham says, closets are nowhere for a human to live. Begin by looking at the labels you are wearing, the ones you've chosen for yourself, the ones you were born into, the ones someone else applied to you, the ones that just happened, the ones that others have written on your skin with words and actions so painful that you think you will wear them forever. When I first came out, I was 16, and I got to hear words like queer, faggot, freak, damned, hell. Took me years to wash those off my skin. Those aren't my labels. I didn't like them. Each label comes with its own closet building kit. Each one has the potential to close you in and lock you away in the dark until you can't imagine how the light would feel. Or maybe just to sap your joy as you try to make sure no one pays attention, no one notices that label, that you're not wearing it all bright and shiny for people to see. But labels and closets are magical. Did you know that? The longer you hide who you are, the longer you let others and their expectations define those labels you wear, the larger they get, the more they weigh, the more they become your only definition. The more you hide in the dark and the safer that dark feels, instead of knowing you, people only learn the shape of your closet walls. Those walls get thicker over the years, pasted over with more and more labels. They say lots of things that start with I am. I am queer. I am divorced. I am an addict. I can't cook. I am biracial. I am the parent of an incarcerated child. I am a felon. I am fat. I am skinny. I am anorexic, I am sick, I am poor, I am rich. I am an abuse survivor, I am an abuser. I am a UU, I believe in God, I believe in miracles, I believe God doesn't exist. They're all labels that we wear. Hundreds more, thousands more, all the things that we don't want to talk about. All the definitions of ourselves that are only pieces. And yet we let them become so much more. Now, not every closet has to be open to everyone at every moment. That's the beauty of this. You can keep the closet. Just step out of it. Some pieces of you are not safe for public consumption at a given point in time, and that's okay. I would never tell a 15-year-old living with a homophobic family to risk becoming homeless or getting harmed. But closets are not for humans. So if you can't be who you are, where you are, maybe you need to start looking for somewhere else to be. If the people around you wouldn't love you if they knew, maybe you need new people. Or maybe you just need to trust the ones around you a little more. You are who you are. You cannot be someone else. We don't get the option of saying, I want the better version. You are the better version. You have to be you because there isn't another choice. And respecting the worth and dignity of every individual begins with respecting yourself. Take off your invisibility cloak whenever you can. Be authentically you. In all of your messiness and your pain and your brokenness and your beauty, we're all broken too. It's okay. You're different, just like all the rest of us. Be honest about who you are. Be direct. If you can't read, don't take the book and tell the person, oh, I didn't get to it yet. Say, I'd love to, but I can't read. Could you help me? Be honest. Don't be sorry for who you are. Don't apologize for it. Apologize if you hurt somebody. But don't apologize for your being. There will always be people who are mad at you and disappointed in you for being who you are. They get to do that. That's their problem. They have learned to love your walls, your closet walls. Think about giving them a chance to love the person inside. No one else gets to write the story of your life. No one else gets to put their expectations before your reality. You alone have your hand on the doorknob, but you are not alone in the room. There are so many closets. So many people peeping through that keyhole, as Ash Beckham said. So many of us listening for the sound of the doors opening around us, waiting to come out, waiting not to be alone. Come out, come out. Come out, wherever you are. Amen.
We extinguish this chalice and we walk together as living light. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our closing hymn this week, number 1014, Standing on the Side of Love. And live authentically whenever possible. Bring light into the closets of your life. Hold the door for others as they do the same. Peace, and may it be so.